Okay, again, we're going to be in chapter 23 this morning, continuing in this study of the book of Acts. It is a book that they call the Acts of the Apostles, but literally, what are we? We are apostles. We are sent by God to do a chore that God has given us to do. And I know the religious world don't see it that way, but you know, I'm not really concerned much about what the religious world sees or thinks. I'm only concerned what my Father thinks and what He wants done. So we'll study it as God has given it to me. Chapter 23, verse 1. And Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. And the high priest Ananias commanded him that stood by him to smite him on the mouth. And Paul said to him, God shall smite you, you whited wall. For sittest thou to judge me after the law, and commands me to be smitten that contrary to the law? And they that stood by said, Reviles there God's high priest? And then Paul said, I wist not, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, Thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. But when Paul perceived that the one part were Sadducees and the other part were Pharisees, he cried out in the council, Men and brethren, I'm a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Of the hope of the resurrection and of the dead I am called into question. And when he had so said, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection, neither angel nor spirit, but the Pharisees confess both. And there arose a great cry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, We find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. And when there arose a great dissension, the chief captain, fearing lest Paul should have been pulled in pieces of them, and commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force from among them, and to bring him into the castle. And the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as thou hast testified of me in Jerusalem, you must thou bear witness also at Rome. And when it was day, certain of the Jews band together and bonded themselves under a curse, saying that they should neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. And they were more than 40 which had made this conspiracy. And they came to the chief priests and elders and said, We have bound ourselves under a great curse that we shall eat nothing till we have slain Paul. And therefore with the council signify to the chief captain that he bring him down to you tomorrow, and as though you would inquire something more perfectly concerning him, and we, or ever he come near, are ready to kill him. And when Paul's sister's son heard of their lying in wait, he went and entered into the castle and told Paul. And Paul called one of the centurions to him and said, Bring this young man to the chief captain, for he has a certain thing to tell him. So he took him and brought him to the chief captain and said, Paul, the prisoner, called me to him and prayed me to bring this young man to you who has something to say to you. Then the chief captain took him by the hand and went with him aside privately and asked him, What is it that thou hast to tell me? And he said, The Jews have agreed to desire you that you wouldest bring Paul down tomorrow to the council as though they would inquire something of him more perfectly. But do not thou yield to them, for they lie in wait for him, of them more than 40 men, which have bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now are they ready, looking for a promise from you. So the chief captain let the young man depart and charged him, See, thou tell no man what you have showed these things to me. And he called unto him two centurions, saying, Make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70, and spearmen 200 in the third hour of the night, and provide them beasts that they may set Paul on and bring him safe unto Felix the governor. And he wrote a letter after this manner, saying, Claudius Lysias unto most excellent governor Felix, greetings. This man was taken of the Jews and should have been killed of them. Then I came with an army and rescued him, having understood that he was a Roman. And when I would have known the cause wherefore they accused him, I brought him forth unto their council, whom I perceived to be accused of questions of their law, but to have nothing laid to his charge worthy of death or bonds. And when they had told me how that the Jews laid wait for the man, I sent straightway to you and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before you that they what they had against him in farewell. Then the soldiers, as it was commanded them, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. On the morrow they left the horsemen to go with him and to the castle, who, when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before him. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province he was. And when he understood that he was of Sicily, "I will hear you," said he, "when thine accusers also are come." And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. Long chapter, seems like a lot of words, but let's see what it has to say for us. Now Paul was called to the council, was dragged before the council to be judged. And Paul, it says, and Paul was gazing intently at the council, and he was saying, "Men and brethren, I've lived in good conscience before God until this day." And the high priest commanded that they stood by him, smack him in the mouth. And Paul said to them, "God shall smite you, you whited wall, because sittest thou to judge me after the law, or according to the law of Moses, contrary to the law of Moses?" Why did he get smited? Why did he get slapped? Why did he get slapped? For not showing reverence to a man. See, the man, not God. And Paul realized that the law said you're not supposed to speak contrary or speak evil of your rulers. But Paul, who came out of the rulers, you would have thought would have knew who it was, wouldn't you? You would have thought he knew who the high priest was, wouldn't you? Evidently, he disconnected. What would that tell you about church worlds? Now, they want you to respect it, but I'm saying Paul evidently had separated so far from the religious world that he didn't even know who the high priest was. He didn't even recognize it. Leave it alone, see? Once you come to God, we have no place for all this church stuff. See, this isn't church we're in. This is a fellowship. We're coming together to commune and fellowship with God. It has nothing to do with church, because you are the churches. See, we're all churches. We're the ecclesia, the called out ones. Okay? And as they stood by, and they that stood by reviled, said, "Revilest thou God's high priest?" And Paul said, "I knew not, brethren, that he was the high priest, because it is written, you shall not speak evil of the ruler of your people." But when Paul perceived that one part of the Sadducees and the other part were Pharisees, he cried out among men and brethren, "I'm a Pharisee, the son of Pharisees. Concerning the hope of resurrection of the dead, am I called into question?" Or into this controversy? Or am I judged, really? Okay? So he said, "I'm judged because of the resurrection." What did Paul do there? He got a separation between them. He knew that they were contrary to each other. And when he knew that there were some there that believed some of the things that he believed, he utilized what God had gave him. He gave him a way out of the condemnation and guilt, didn't he? And see, God gives us an understanding. He gives us a mind to use. It's not called compromise in that realm. God gives you the understanding, I know how I can step out of this place. I don't have to fight, but I can just make the statements and step out of the way. And all Paul did was said, "You know, hey guys, I'm being judged because of what you believe." So what are they going to do? They're going to come to his defense. And exactly what they did, and separated them. No, at the time they didn't know, but they know they believed the words that he said. You know, they thought they did anyway. And when he had said so, there arose a controversy between the Pharisees and Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. Do you really know what a Sadducee and a Pharisee is? Let me read you what a Pharisee is. Okay, this is according to Thayer's Greek definitions. It's a sect that seems to have started after the Jewish exile, in addition to all the Old Testament books. The Pharisees were recognized in oral tradition and a standard of belief and life, and they sought for distinction and praise by outward observation of external rites and by giving forth of forms of piety and such ceremonial washings, fastings, prayers, and almsgiving, and comparatively negligent of genuine piety. They prided themselves on their fancied good works. They held strenuously to a belief of the existence of good and evil, angels, and to the expectation of a Messiah, and they cherished the hope that the dead, after a preliminary experience, either of reward or penalty in Hades or the grave, would be recalled to life by him and be requited each according to his individual deeds. In opposition to the usurped dominion of the Herods and the rule of the Romans, they stoutly upheld the theocracy and their country's cause and possessed great influence with the common people. According to Josephus, they numbered more than 6,000. They were bitter enemies of Jesus and his cause, and in turn severely rebuked by him for their various ambitions, hollow reliance on outward works, and affection of piety in order to gain popularity. That's what Thayer says about a Pharisee. Now let me give you a Sadducee. And if you believe like them, you'd be Sadducee too. A religious party at the time of Christ among the Jews who denied that the oral law was a revelation of God to the Israelites and who denied the written law alone to and deemed the written law alone to be obligatory on the nation as divine authority. They denied the following doctrines. Now, this is what Sadducees believe. They deny the resurrection of the body. They deny the immortality of the soul. They deny the existence of spirits and angels. They deny the existence of divine predestination. They affirm free will. Sadducees did not believe in heaven or hell, punishment or reward after death. They believed in strict justice and not mercy to any offender. Sounds like religion today, don't it? But see, there's some things, and both these guys, these sects, are correct in some things. Both of them have pieces. The Sadducees deny the resurrection of the body, which I don't think this physical body is going to be resurrected. It's going to be a spiritual body. Immortality of the soul. I don't believe that the soul is going to live forever. See, I believe what they believe there. The soul is a mixture. It's my spirit that lives forever, and your spirit. They deny the existence of spirits and angels. I know what most people believe in spirits, little demons running around, little imps running around sabotaging everything. I don't believe none of that anyway. See? And angels are messengers. They ain't little fat babies with naked babies with wings and big adults with sheets on them with no feet. I mean, that's what people think in their mind when they see this angel thing. And angel is the word messenger. It's agalos in the Greek, malach in the Hebrew, and it means messenger. You know what you are today when you speak the word of God? You're a messenger bringing the message to someone. So why do we have to have wings and be little fat naked babies? See? It's ridiculous. So I can believe some of the things they believe, but not all of it. They believe in divine predestination. Hello. We were predestined in him before the foundation of the world, weren't we? They affirmed free will. Sorry, lost me there. I don't believe in free will. I believe in God's will. They did not believe in heaven or hell. Well, I don't believe in the heaven or hell that the church preaches. I believe in a hell being right between your ears right now, and I believe in heaven sitting in the presence of God right now. Because the only time I live is when? Right now. There's no place in this book that says after you die, God is going to torment you in hell for eternity. That's something preachers come up with. There's nothing here says that. God never said it. So I can see some things that they're saying is right and some things that's wrong. They believe in punishment or reward after death, and I don't believe that because there's no place in this book that says after you die, God's going to punish you. That's concepts that preachers come up with. It's not the truth. They believe in strict justice and not mercy. Well, I'm sorry, I believe in mercy. His mercy endures for how long? Forever. Well, that blows their theory, don't it? See? So those are things like that we got to realize. There's things that everybody has a piece of the truth, but a piece of the truth is not enough. It's total truth. We got to have it all. And if we're satisfied or settle for anything less than the totality of truth, what are we doing? We're shortchanging ourselves and we're accepting a lie. We're accepting deception when we settle for anything less than total truth. Do you hear that? Okay, where was that back here in Acts? I got through 8, didn't I? Okay. And there arose a great cry or an outcry, and the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part stood up and contended fiercely, saying, "We find no evil in this man, But if a spirit or a messenger has spoken to him, let us not fight against or resist God. They're saying, hey, maybe this guy did hear from God. Who knows? Let's hear him and see what he says. Let's judge it. So there's a little bit of wisdom there, isn't there? Wee little bit, but it's something there. And see, that's what the church world does today. If you come up with anything that's contrary to what they believe has already been set in stone, they're going to fight you over it. But the wisdom is, you should hear it and then make a thought process out of it and measure it out, weigh it out, search it out, meditate on it, find out in the scripture, is it what this person's saying true? If you have a real good foundation in the word and someone comes in and prophesies something to you or speaks something in your life, how long does it take you to know for sure if it's right or wrong? Just like that. My spirit has never lied to me. My soul will lie to me all the time, my mind, if I want to believe it, but I don't. But my spirit has never lied to me. I've had many people quote things out of the Bible. I couldn't tell you where it's at, if it was right. Couldn't tell you where it was at, if it was wrong. I can tell you it's not in there. You throw something at me, and I'll tell you if it's in there or not. It's because I know the patterns of God. So if you know the patterns, you know it don't fit. If it don't fit in the puzzle, in that completion of it, it's not God, is it? Just wipe it out and forget about it. And that's what when you think about it and hear it, that's what you should be doing, finding out what it is. And when there arose a great dissension or a controversy, the chief captain, fearing lest Paul should what? Or could be, not should have been, could be dismembered, what it says, of them or by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force from them and to bring him into what? The barracks, not really the castle, but the barracks where the soldiers lived. They could protect him in there. And the night following, the Lord stood by him. Let me say something else. The religious folk wanted to kill him, true? God has a purpose in his life. How come they can't touch him? God's got a hedge around him. He's protected, see? If you would understand that, if God's got something for your life, you don't have to fear dying in a car wreck, a boat wreck, a motorcycle, an airplane. You don't have to fear that stuff because God has a plan for your life. You might experience a lot of tough things to get there, but you're not going to die until the time appointed by the Father. I guarantee you that. Because if that wasn't true, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now. I can guarantee you that. Neither would you? There's a lot of things we have to take. See, we take this word too general and too lightly as we read it. When you see something here, you got to start thinking all the things that's involved in it. It's not just a few words written on a page. You could write volumes out of this chapter, volumes and volumes, if we just take the time to think about how it interlaces into our life. I mean, you could write volumes out of this one chapter that most people would read over and say, well, there's not really nothing much here. No, there's tons of stuff in here if we sit and work at it and find what it's all for our life. It's for us. If we don't want the truth, then just read over it and go on. If we want the truth, we'll dig in. I'll tell you what, cast your anchor out and hang on, because there's things here we need to know about, need to think about. And I'm not touching them all. I'm only going to give you an outline, and it's up to you to work it out yourself, right? And the night following, the Lord stood by him and said, be what? Be of good cheer. Literally, it says, have courage. Now, why would the angel come and tell the apostle, the great apostle Paul, have courage? Tell me what was going on in his mind. He was sweating her out, son. He didn't know what was going to happen to him. See? He thought, you know, hey, I might die here. These cats are serious. They're going to kill me. Now, God is the discerner of the what? The thoughts and the intents of the heart, the mind. God knew he needed some encouragement, so he sent a messenger to him not to condemn him and say, oh, well, sorry, Paul, you're on your way to hell, buddy. They got you. And that's what the preachers are teaching today. Well,
what sin you have in your life?
Yeah, what sin you got in your life, Paul? You're on your way to hell. No, we can't do nothing about it. No, God sent him a messenger and said, be of good courage. Have some courage here, son. I've called you. Trust me. I can protect you. He did, didn't he? He took care of him. He said, have courage, Paul, because as you have testified concerning me in Jerusalem, you must also bear witness at Rome. See? It's not finished yet. If God's not finished with you, they can't kill you. Yeah, see, don't worry about it. That's why everybody's getting all choked up about things. Oh, I might die. Well, I mean, what the heck? If I die, it's only when I'm supposed to. So I'm already home. What's the struggle then? I'm out of this burden place, you know, this place of burden. Enjoy the ride. That's it. Enjoy the journey because the destination's going to be great. Yep. And when it was day, certain of the Jews made a conspiracy, is what it should say, and bound themselves together under a curse, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul. Now, if these Jews were real good Jews, and they weren't of the good Sanhedrin, or they would have known the word, you know, that if you make this curse that they've got on him, they made this pact against him, if they don't fulfill it, they can't eat or drink. That means they're almost sealing their own death warrants, aren't they? Because the book says, touch not my anointed, do my prophets no harm. So they're going to touch one of God's prophets and really get to think they're going to get by with it? Think that their mind hasn't really been warped? And as they were more than 40, which had made this conspiracy, and they came to the chief priest or the high priest and elders and said, we have bound ourselves under a great curse that we will eat nothing until we have killed Paul. Now therefore, you with the council, that's the council of the Sanhedrin, inform the chief, the captain, that he bring him down to you tomorrow as though you would inquire more perfectly concerning him. And we, or ever he come near, are ready to kill him. And see, that's what religion does. If religion don't understand you, they want to kill you. Now, they don't literally today, we're not going to say stone you to death. They're not going to cut your head off. They're not going to hang you. They're not going to nail you to a tree. But with their tongue, like a chainsaw fired up, they're ready to chop your heads off. They'll talk about you. They'll do everything in their power to destroy your image or credibility with anybody on the face of the earth. That's their way of killing you today. And they'll do it, believe me. I've had a few chainsaws reared up on me. Still do. That's okay. They haven't got me yet. Yeah. Had a man tell me one time, because of the opposition we were facing, he said, have you learned anything? And I said, I think I have. And he said, well, what is it? And I said, well, you tell me what I should have learned. He said, well, you should have learned you shouldn't be here. I said, oh, really? He said, you need to go someplace else, get away from here. I said, well, opposition tells me I'm in the right place. No, opposition tells me I'm not in the right place yet. You know, so I'll just go ahead and stay. If you don't like where I'm at, you leave. Okay, verse 15. No, we did that, didn't we? 16. And when Paul's sister's son, or literally his nephew, heard of their murderous purpose, that's what it says in the language, he went and entered into the castle, and literally that's the barracks, and told Paul. Then Paul called one of the centurions to him, and that's a captain over 100 men, you know. He says, take this young man to the captain because he has a certain thing to tell him. Now, Paul was smart enough not to be telling everybody what he was sending to the high captain or the colonel. Sometimes you need to speak things yourself and not tell everything to somebody else. And there's wisdom in that. Because when you start telling a lot of people, what happens? They'll change something, surely. It'll be changed. But also, they start telling other people and other people and other people and other people. Next thing you know, it's everywhere. And Paul didn't want this out just yet, did he? That's exactly right. So be quiet and just go directly. You tell him. Don't tell nobody else. He goes directly to the horse's head, to the mouth, not to the rear end, right? And you can get it done. So he took him and led him, not brought him, but led him to the captain and said, Paul the prisoner called me to him and request, not pray, that's religious 16th century English. He requested me to bring this young man to you who has something to say to you. And then the captain took him by the hand and went with him aside privately and asked him, what is it that you have to tell me? And he said, the Jews have agreed to request, not desire, but request you that you would bring down Paul tomorrow into their council, the Council of Sanhedrin, so as though they would inquire something concerning him more perfectly. But do not yield to them, because they lie in wait for him, of them more than 40 men, which have bound themselves with an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now are they ready, looking for an announcement from you. Not a promise, but an announcement from you that he'll send him down. So the captain let the young man depart and charged him, "See thou tell no man that you have showed these things to me or told me of these things." And he called two centurions, saying, "Make ready 200 soldiers to go to Caesarea, and horsemen 70, that's 70, and spearmen 200 in the third hour of the night." He's going to travel in the third hour of the night. And look at the protection he's got. 200 soldiers, horsemen 70, or 70, and 200 spear chunkers. You think he's protected? 470, is it? 470 men? Guess what? That's a lot of protection for one man, isn't it? You think God has a way of knowing how much you need? He can protect you, huh? Yeah. See how much protection you really have? You don't realize what you got in God. And he said, "And provide them beasts that they may set Paul on and bring him to Felix the governor." And he wrote a letter after this manner. This is what he said. "Claudius Lysias," Claudius means lame, and Lysias is releaser, "to the most," or the very honorable, "governor Felix," which means happy, "greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and should have been killed by them. Then came I with an army and rescued him, having understood that he was a Roman. And when I would have known the cause wherefore they accused him, I brought him forth into their council, whom I found to be accused of questions of their law, but to have nothing laid to his charge worthy of death or bonds. And when it was reported to me that the Jews laid wait for the man, I sent immediately to you and gave commandment to his accusers also to say before you what they had against him. Farewell." Then the soldiers, as it was commanded them, took Paul and brought him by night to Antipatris. Okay? What does Antipatris mean? For the Father. He said, "Take him there for the Father." Okay? So who's in charge of all this? Father is. God is. So God set it up. And see, now that Paul understood the language, he understands what these words mean. We read these English words and have no comprehension of what they mean, do we? In our society, we have no comprehension. We have to go look and find out. Once you find out, he's telling Paul, he's giving him like a little secret message. "Hey, Paul, Father's taking care of the whole thing, isn't he? No worries. Fear not. I'm right here with you. I got you under everything covered." So it's all what the Father wants. "And on the morrow," the next morning, "they left the horsemen to go with him and returned to the barracks, who, when they came to Caesarea and delivered the epistle to the governor, presented Paul also before him. And when the governor had read the letter, he asked of what province he was. And when he understood that he was of Sicily," says Sicily, but Sicily, it's in Italy, "I will hear you," said he, "when your accusers are also come." And he commanded him to be kept in Herod's judgment hall. Now, he's already got Felix telling him there's nothing worthy of this man to be killed. Why is he still in bonds? You better believe he's a threat. But why are they still binding him? He's never done anything. And he's a Roman on top of that. And see, a Roman in that day was the people of control. And they had rights above anybody else. The Jewish people had no rights, but the Romans did. They're taking the multitude. See, it's a democratic society, more or less, just like it is today. Democratic society, and the majority is voting on something. Whether it's right or wrong, they do it anyway. Right? So know this. Just because you're right, don't think the chains are going to be cut off of you. When religion hangs them labels on you, don't think they're going to fall away just because you're doing the right thing. Don't ever think that. I'm going to tell you this right now. This walking into Tabernacles, walking into the Feast of Tabernacles, is not for wimps.
Isn't it just like walking in the fiery furnace?
Absolutely.
The
The only thing, absolutely, just like Daniel chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or 2, whatever it is, when they were thrown in the fire, the only thing the fire did was burn the bonds off and set them free. They were still in the fire, but said there was a fourth man appeared. Well, that was from an external view, wasn't it? Where was the fourth man all along? He was in them. He was right there in them. Not with him, but they were in him. Okay. The fourth man never appeared. He was already there. It appeared to someone external of the fire. If you don't realize what the fire is doing for you, you can always think there's someone going to show up in the last minute, call for Underdog to show up or somebody, you know, Superman. You see the inside, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And what did the three Hebrew children say before they threw them in the fire? Whether our God deliver us or he deliver us not makes no difference. We will not worship your idols. See, so when you refuse to go along with religion and bow down to their idols, they'll throw you in the fire. That's okay. Whether he delivers me or not, I'm still not going to bow down. And that's the same message we have to have today. No compromise. No compromise no matter what. I mean, it's not in my repertoire anyway to do those things. So when I was in the world, I still wouldn't compromise if I thought I was right. I'd go to my grave, and I'm willing to do that today. You know, but I know this one thing. He told me I'd die an old man of natural causes, and I might be getting close to that old part. But you know what? But it's not natural for someone to shoot me or to kill me in any other way. I'll die natural is just lay down and go to sleep. So I don't have any fear of death. I kind of looking forward to that end when it comes to an end. Because it's not going to be bad. It's just going to pass on over and be with my Father. He's still right in the fire. Because the fire is all over me.